Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, thanks for joining. Please make sure you subscribe to follow us on all the various platforms here on the podcast, as well as on YouTube. The stuff we write on Substack, as well as quick takes on Instagram and on Threads. If you're enjoying what we're putting out there, please make sure you're sharing with all your friends and family. And if you have questions or comments about the stuff we're putting out there, please make sure you leave them in comments to us. We'll be more than happy to cover them in future talks and in further discussions on the topics you have questions about. We tend to see a lot of things in our medical charts. And a lot of the medical charts will give us this reading of BMI, body mass index, that classification of underweight, normal weight, overweight, obese, etc. But have you ever thought for a second, what's wrong with using the body mass index? Why do we use it? Does it tell us anything useful? Well, let's talk about that.
Warning. The following presentation contains information that might contradict what you have previously heard or believed to be true about how the human body works, and contains material that is not suitable for closed-minded individuals. Enjoy.
And so when we start looking at this body mass index issue, what we're really talking about is body weight, body composition, and other measures that are relatively easy to take. So why do we use it? Well, it's relatively easy to take. It's quick. It's inexpensive. It's an inexpensive analysis that we can do about the height, the weight, and the body composition in terms of fat mass versus fat-free mass for an individual. What do we need in order to take it? Scales, body mass analyzers, body composition analyzers, a tape measure. What does it actually tell us? What does body mass index and what does the body composition analysis actually tell us? It tells us our body weight, how much mass do I actually have? It tells us the relationship between fat mass and fat-free mass. And it's going to give us a relationship between our height and our weight, the BMI. This is what a lot of health professionals and fitness experts have liked to focus on when we start looking at relative health index, along with other measures of body composition and body weight. The other thing we look at is what's referred to as the waist-to-hip ratio, which is the relationship between the girth of the abdomen that the people have. This is an indication of how much visceral fat somebody might have relative to subcutaneous fat. That's the fat underneath the skin versus the fat that's around the organs. Visceral fat being the fat around the organs, subcutaneous fat being the fat that is found around or underneath the skin. So let's talk about body mass index or a height to weight ratio. And what are we doing with height to weight ratio? Well, height to weight ratio is useful when we start looking at infants and young children in terms of their growth development. It becomes a little bit less accurate of a measurement when we start looking at post-adolescence in terms of height and weight. When we start looking at it in terms of juveniles, start looking at it in terms of children, what we look at in terms of classifications of body mass index or height to weight ratio is an indication of percentiles within the normal population, where we want to be between the 5th and the 85th percentile, where 50th percentile is normal. That is the midway point of the population. If I'm above the 85th percentile, I start to run risks for long-term health issues. If I'm underneath that 50th percentile, if I start creeping towards the 5th percentile, I'm at severe risk for growth development issues. The reason why height-to-weight ratio and BMI is more advantageous in younger individuals than in post-adolescent individuals is because excess weight in adolescents and excess weight in juveniles, in children and teenagers, is going to be predominantly within fat mass as opposed to fat-free mass, which is where we start looking at, okay, what does body mass index tell me? Body mass index is a calculation of height to weight. And it's a ratio of height to weight, in which we're going to look at classifications of underweight, normal weight, overweight, pre-obese, obese, extreme obese, or morbid obese, based off of WHO, World Health Organization classifications, as relates to what is the index number. And so when we start looking at this, in terms of this calculation that we happen to have, we end up having this index table. And what the index table is simply telling me is, what is the relationship between my body weight and my body height? It doesn't tell me anything else but that. It was originally developed as a way to establish life insurance policies and risks for life insurance policies back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Once again, when people who had high body mass had high fat mass. A lot of the health issues that we see in terms of this BMI, in terms of what does the BMI tell me about fitness and about my overall health, is that it's providing me an estimated relative risk for chronic disease. The problem is the population that we are assigning this relative risk for chronic disease to, as relates to BMI, because we're not studying the entire population. We're studying the diseased population. The population that has chronic health issues due to overfatness, where they fall within the fitness and fatness continuum. We're not looking at it in terms of the overall population, which is why BMI is not a very reliable measurement to use as it relates to health. It simply tells me what is the relationship of surface area to mass. What is the relationship between my height and my weight? Which takes us to the problem. The big problem with BMI is that it's not a very good predictor of mortality or a very good predictor of disease risk, even though we like to think about it as disease risks. There are other measurements that we can use that have higher likelihoods of associations and higher likelihoods of linkage to chronic diseases than BMI. This is where we start having to look at what are the contributing factors to health? What is the relationship between fitness and fatness? And the fact that we have to remember is that we have this intricate balance between level of activity and fat signaling as relates to what is my increasing and decreasing relative risk for disease and the contributing factors between fitness and fatness that's going to develop where do I lie within that continuum of fitness and fatness towards my overall health, which has nothing to do with my actual body composition. And that's because the whole entire idea about health and overall health as it relates to body morphology is an excessively complex problem. It's a complex problem that we want to assign very simple solutions to that we cannot assign simple solutions to. This is where we have to look at how might that idea about simple solution impact the way in which I present my ideals about health and about fitness as relates to what somebody looks like, which takes us into other problems. And it's not just with BMI that we have these other problems. These other problems are also going to lie within the other measures that we might have, such as waist to hip ratio or body composition analysis. Because either way we look at this, whether we look at it in terms of just simple mass, your body weight, if we look at it in terms of body mass index, BMI, if we look at it in terms of waist to hip ratio or in terms of body composition analysis, body fat versus fat-free mass, the whole idea here is that we tend to have a social issue coming into play. And that's because we raise the risk for body image issues. We raise the risk for weight biases. We raise the risk for issues as it relates to what is body image and what do we think of as being healthy versus what do we sociologically and socially accept as being beautiful. And this also goes into all of the various scams that we might be presented and misinformation and disinformation that we might be present as to what is the best body image that I might be able to project, something we've talked about quite a lot. But the other thing that comes into play in terms of this idea about body mass index, BMI, as well as the other measures of body composition, is that it changes my internalization and my level of self-esteem as to what my body is and how I feel about my body simply based off of what is the projected acceptance of my body image relative to my BMI, that is, what is my classification, Am I normal weight? Am I overweight? Am I underweight? Am I obese? Am I morbidly obese? Am I severely underweight? And how do I change the way in which I talk about health and the way in which I talk about diet and the way in which I talk about nutrition, the way in which I talk about exercise around individuals based off of how I perceive their body image strictly off of what the BMI is telling me or what I perceive their body composition to be? It's also going to raise the risk for healthcare issues coming into play based off of preconceived notions and body image and weight bias being projected by the healthcare professionals. We also have to worry about the way in which we present body image and weight biases in terms of media and how that media might impact the way in which I perceive myself and the way in which I feel about myself based off of my body image or how people think about my body image, which leads to issues of weight stigma, which leads to issues of portrayal of body image, which leads to issues of eating disorders and body dysmorphic disorders, because we cannot differentiate between reality and fiction based off of what's being presented to us.
And let's go ahead and let's continue this discussion, looking at and revisiting some of the points and discussions that we had as relates to the culture of thinness, because that's where we're really going to come into play with why BMI and why the various body composition analysis techniques are not as important as we report them to be or purport them to be. Because as we pointed out just now, the fact that it leads to a lot of the psychological issues that we might have as relates to the ideals about health and ideals about fitness, and the fact that what my body image presents and what I look like is not what my level of fitness happens to be.
There are certain norms, certain ideals that get passed within cultures, within societies that indicate whether or not we have attractiveness, whether or not we have a quality to us that would lead to appreciation, that would lead to wanting to model behavior, that would want to have some sort of reproductive attractiveness is one of the ways that we might think about this in terms of, do we find that person physically appealing? And this ideal changes within societies, changes within time, that leads to constant fluctuation in terms of what society deems as being beautiful, what society deems as being attractive, that can and does lead to a host of health issues, that can and does lead to a host of medical problems, that can and does lead to a host of psychological problems. One of the ways that we have expanded on this ideal currently within our current society is the idea that fat is unattractive, that fat is something to be avoided in terms of body fat. But how does that messaging, how does that ideal lead to issues that we hope to resolve by eliminating body fat? How does that cause health issues to come about? Is the ideals of thinness, is the culture of thinness ruining our health? When we start looking at how the culture and our society approaches body image and the way in which we present ourselves, there is a sense that we have a culture of thinness, a idea where we praise the thin and kind of ridicule the thick. And there's a host of issues that can come about from this idea, even though we state that we're more aware of the fact that body image is not the ideals of health, that are not the ideals of beauty, where we have a rising awareness and a rising popularity around things such as the body positivity stuff that we've talked about previously, where we're still beholden to a cultural ideal about what thin means and about what thick means. A culture that is quite possibly ruining our health. It's quite possibly ruining our health because of the fact that we rely upon actions and recommendations from individuals that see thin as the end of our health journey and thick as being what we want to avoid. Actions that are often done by a combination of smugness by the recommender, smugness where they're seeing themselves as being right, as having this ideal of I'm right, you're wrong, this self-righteousness of being on a mission to combat the health ills of overfat, of obesity. This combination of praise and persecution comes about through a never-ending barrage of implicit and explicit overt messaging. Messaging that makes many feel that they are unfit, unhealthy, or obese, even if the reality of their lives is quite the opposite. This is where we pointed out over almost 14, 15 years ago that we live in a continuum of healthiness based off of our fitness and our fatness factors. And we utilize the term fitness and fatness not to ridicule fat, but to indicate that when we start to accumulate fat mass, adverse health comes with it, where there is excessive amounts of inflammation that come about, that there's chronic inflammation that can come about that lead to a host of the non-communicable diseases that we spend billions of dollars on each year treating. But what's happened is that message that we have this continuum, this fitness and fatness continuum, has been stoked by this overt and this implicit messaging that unless you are very low body fat, that unless you look like Adonis, or that you have this minimal amount of fat and look like the supermodels for the women, you're unfit, that you're unattractive, that you're unhealthy. And that ideal that has corrupted the messaging that we first put out there back in 2009, 2010, that corrupting has always been there. It's underlied a lot of the advertisements about health that is the implication for this desire that somehow we can get a pill, a magic pill, that is somehow going to eliminate the body fat issues as it relates to health. But what's happened is that corruption of fat associated with health issues to fat being unattractive, unwanted, has permeated throughout society in this cultural ideal of thinness.
A cultural idea that will impact our health discussions because we end up overlaying what we think of as being the healthiness as what is being the thinnest. The problem with all of that is that we ignore the fitness aspects of what our lifestyle is going to impart into not just what we look like, but how we actually physiologically function. This is where if I happen to express over fatness and I start to become more active without seeing drastic changes in body composition and without seeing any changes in my body mass index, I will automatically start to become healthier. We cannot associate body mass index with health. And it's for people who are active, it becomes less of a linkage between body composition or body mass index with my overall health, even though we have this cultural identity about thinness being healthy.
A culture that gets expressed through multiple types of icons and images that get portrayed, where self-worth comes from looking a certain way, where I'm going to do whatever I can do in order to improve my sense of self-worth by changing whatever behaviors I can change, by doing whatever I can do in order to obtain that ideal image of what society has deemed to be worthy.
Leading to many of the issues and concepts that relates to weight bias and body image bias that can lead to healthcare professionals being astounded by individuals that do not have this ideal body image as being healthy, as where someone that happens to have excess weight has normal cardiometabolic readings, has normal blood pressure, has normal heart rate, has low cholesterol levels, where they become astounded by the fact that, wait, you're overweight. Wait, your BMI says you're obese. You shouldn't have these other numbers. where we equate body image, body weight, BMI as the indication for what somebody should be simply because of very poor correlative studies and linkages where they ignore the other factors within lifestyle that are going to impact what readings might be presented in terms of healthiness. This is where we have to kind of separate what is socially ideal, what is deemed as being attractive, quote unquote, sexy, versus what is actually healthy. And what we should be working towards is healthy, always working towards what is healthy, which can become problematic when we start to compare what we idealize as healthy with what is being presented to us through various media feeds as what is ideal and what might be healthy, whether that projection is real or not.
When we can't differentiate between fake and real, it becomes very hard to understand what is the appropriate behaviors to undertake in order to be healthy. And this is where we get lost in the discussion as to what is healthy versus what is body image. And that inability to differentiate between the two leads to hosts of issues. The augmentation that we see in these displays in media, we readily acknowledge that we get a false sense of ideals by looking at these augmented icons, by looking at these augmented images. They give us a false sense of what to focus on within diet and within exercise, where we lack awareness as to the normal curve for the population and the fact that everybody's going to fall somewhere on that normal curve, that everybody's going to have different genetic components, different hormonal components, different environmental cues, different social cues, different psychological cues as to what they're willing to do and what they're willing not to do in terms of behaviors. The ideal about that self-motivated, self-selected, self-monitored behavior, allowing for long-term follow-through on diet and exercise,
along with what people would be willing to recommend in terms of what people should follow based off of their body mass index or their body composition, based off of the faulty narrative that we have established as relates to what BMI and what body composition actually means in terms of overall health, but also what type of exercise is and is not appropriate sociologically and culturally for those types of individuals to perform. Without understanding that, there are specific types of exercise that are actually more physiologically beneficial than other types of exercise, which is where we have to stop the false narrative that endurance exercise, that quote-unquote cardio or aerobic exercise, is of better benefit than resistance exercise because of the acute caloric imbalance that can come about, the higher amounts of, quote, calorie burning, which is not true, that will occur from exercise. It's not about calories. It's not about calorie expenditure. It's about changing hormonal responses and the willingness for the person to self-select, self-monitor their behaviors. It's that self-selection, self-monitoring of behavior, the elimination of coercion, which is going to eliminate a lot of the health issues that are associated with high amounts of body fat that come about due to where that person lies on the fitness and fatness continuum that has led to the false narrative that high BMI is an indicator of.
Yet the infiltration of this idolization of the toned body and the glorification of the sacrifices being made in order to get that idolized toned body circumvents any of the positive health aspects that can come about from the encouragement of the inclusivity of various body types and various cultural norms within the portrayal of body image.
Ideology that has crept its way into messaging, the way in which we think about what it means to be thin, what it means to be thick,
crept its way into public health discussions about eating, about dieting, crept its way into marketing of mass-produced foods, messaging that tiptoes the line between being confusing and being obsessive compulsive, can almost seem downright schizophrenic. Messaging that has on one side of a page, restriction, 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 whereas on the other side of the page, indulge, indulge, indulge. Messaging that leads to the consumption of ultra-processed foods with recognized metabolic disruptors and sweetened foods with recognized metabolic disruptors, along with the use of a host of dietary supplements that are meant to stimulate weight loss and curb appetite that may not be as healthy as what the sellers want us to think. Messaging that misappropriates the importance of caloric content for foods over the nutritional content of what we're eating, where we become more aware of numerical quantas within the food as opposed to the actual nutrients of the food. The takeaway messaging of this type of marketing is to understand nutrition based off of energy content and not about nutrition. Messaging that has us understand that nutrition is based on energy content of the food that should somehow be expended through exercise, even though the energy expended during exercise and after exercise is a fraction of the total energy expenditure simply necessary to live. Messaging that leads to a feeling that one must compulsively exercise to offset energy intake from foods without awareness of the nutrients required in order to maintain normal homeostasis, in order to maintain health, where we blatantly label some foods and some nutrients as being intrinsically bad or unhealthy, while other foods and other nutrients as intrinsically healthy, where we have demonized carbohydrates, where we have demonized sugars, where we have exalted proteins and exalted amino acids, where we demonize specific types of exercise while exalting other forms of exercise, where we have a focus on diet and exercise based off of energy and energy expenditure versus nutrient load and nutrient balance that leads to a number of body dysmorphic eating behaviors such as bulimia, anorexia, exercise bulimia. But more importantly, it can and does instill nutrient deficiencies in key nutrients, even when we feel like we're following the appropriate dietary practice. Deficits that can be detrimental, that can have detrimental effects on tissue health, that contribute to diseases like osteopenia leading to osteoporosis, sarcopenia leading to loss of skeletal muscle, and even neurodegenerative diseases. A similar sense that is seen with the type of exercises that we're willing to do, or the pattern of exercise, or the programs we're willing to follow based off of social acceptance, based off of cultural acceptance, or the type of exercise that we are following, or the indoctrination to exercise programs that lead to inclusion and exclusion of individuals within society based off of the willingness to do specific types of exercise, where we get an overexposure to certain types of exercise programs and exercise patterns as being socially acceptable versus socially unacceptable. The misguided practices here lead to the multitude of fad diets and fad exercise programs that we hear about, have tried, intend to try, or hope to avoid. The cultural desire and the cultural ideals of thinness leads to many of the body-related messages that we see throughout publications. The ideals portrayed by the culture of thinness have an adverse effect on our overall health, while the activities, while the recommendations being made by many projecting the culture of thinness have some benefit to them. The means by which they are portrayed, the means in which they are projected, lead to adverse effects on both the psyche of the individual as well as the physiology of the individual.
Which is why we must be very careful when reflecting upon body morphology, body mass index, as a means to determine overall quality of the individual's health.
We have spoken about a lot of these issues previously, and I would recommend going back and listening to or watching those videos. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you got a little bit out of this. Hopefully this raised some curiosity questions for you. Please make sure you're dropping us questions and comments about any of the stuff that we're covering. If you wish us to cover specific things, please let us know. We're more than happy to listen to any of the comments that you happen to have and try to respond appropriately to those comments. Please make sure you're giving us that big 5-star rating. Make sure you give us this big thumbs up, sharing out what we're putting out there with all your friends and family. Follow us on all of the platforms, podcast, YouTube, as well as on Substack with the quick posts on Threads and on Instagram.